This is WMUK's West Southwest Brief. I'm Gordon Evans. Hospice chaplain Carrie Egan says most people at the end of life want to make a connection. She says the process of losing a loved one is hard, and sometimes patients in hospice are in pain for a long time before death.
If there is something good to be said about it, it's that they do have time to be aware and to consciously make those connections.
Carrie Egan wrote about reflections on life, secrets, and how patients in hospice try to make connections in her book On Living. Egan will speak at the McShane Preacher Colloquium on Sunday, March 10th and Monday, March 11th at First Presbyterian Church in Kalamazoo. The extended version of our interview is available at WMUK.org, the WMUK app, and through WMUK's West Southwest podcast from Apple iTunes and Google. Please describe the job of a hospice chaplain.
So this is a harder question than you might realize. It's a job, I think, that a lot of people, even people who work in hospice sometimes, don't really understand. And I think in large part that's because a good hospice chaplain can be something of a shapeshifter, right? Because when you're a hospice chaplain, you're goal for every patient you go in to see is to help them meet whatever spiritual needs they have. And that can span the universe, right? Every individual person is going to have different spiritual needs at the end of life. And there might be some commonalities and there might be some things that we do over and over again, but every person is unique. And so their needs are going to be unique.
Egan says a hospice chaplain works with others on a team to care for the patient and their family. She says sometimes religion is important to the patient and sometimes it's not. Egan says hospice is not the time for, as she says, preaching and teaching.
The job of a hospice chaplain, again, we have one goal, which is to meet the patient's spiritual needs, but that can mean a million different things.
So there are some very personal stories in your book that people shared with you during that time in hospice as they were nearing the end of their life. In order to put the book together, did you get permission from people before they died? Did you get permission from family members? How did it all come together?
So every story that's in the book, those were people who said, I would like my story shared with a larger audience. That was their spiritual need, which you'll notice it's a very small book. There were not that many people who said that, but there were some. The first story, I call her Gloria. No one has their real name in the book, and there's no defining details or characteristics of anybody in the book. But Gloria very specifically said, it starts with a story, and that's why I started there. It starts with the story of Gloria, who had a very eventful life. And she said one day, we were sitting on the couch, and she said, you know, I always wanted to meet a writer.
Egan had written a book about 12 years before her conversation with Gloria, but didn't mention it at first. But Egan says Gloria really wanted someone to share her stories. And Gloria said she prayed that she would meet a writer. Egan says she decided to say something.
You know, Gloria, did I ever mention that I had once written a book? And she looked at me and she said, you? She didn't believe me at all. And I said, yeah, me. And she goes, a real book? And I said, yes, a real book. And she still didn't believe me. And she goes, published? And I said, yes, published and everything. And then she threw her hands up to the ceiling and she said, Jesus, I thought you were going to send me a man. And she turned back to me and she goes, Carrie, it's you. You're the writer. She said, the Holy Spirit answered my prayers. And I have already told you all my stories. Now it's easy. You just got to write them down. It was not easy. But she very explicitly, not only did she give permission for me to tell those stories, she brought it up. She wanted those stories told.
There's a chapter title in your book, If I Had Only Known, I Would Have Danced More.
Yeah, someone said that to me.
And that leads us to that whole question of regret and the things that you would have done differently if you had it to do over again. You know, is it possible to read your book and maybe think about what people say when the end is there and maybe live a little bit better before that time when we're talking to a hospice chaplain?
I hope so. I mean, that's the point of the book, right? I mean, that's why people wanted these stories told, as they said, I wish I had figured this out sooner. I didn't. Maybe someone else could. Maybe someone else can read my story and figure out sooner, faster than I figured it out. People ask all the time, like, what do people who are dying regret? They always want to know. They want to know two questions. What are their last words, and what are their big regrets? And it took me a while to figure out that I actually don't think most people have this deep interest in death and dying. I don't think that's why they're asking those questions. I think what they're really asking is, what am I going to regret? And what are the most important things to say? What are the most important things that I should say, right? So you're asking, what are people's last words? Because you really want to know what are the important things to say. And you're asking, what do people regret? Because you really want to know, what am I going to regret? So instead of focusing on those questions, what do other people say? What do other people regret? What I tell people is to think about what you regret now, right? Nobody at the end of life ever said to me, I can't believe I regret this. I can't believe I regret not spending any time with my children. No one is shocked by their regrets, right? No one is like, I woke up this morning and I can't believe it. Nobody says that. Everybody already knew what their regrets were. And this whole focus on last words is sort of very Hollywood. Most people's last words, most people are in and out of consciousness. Many people are delirious. Many people don't have last words, that they're even conscious or aware of their last words. When people ask, you know, what are their famous last words? What they really want to know is, what should I tell my family now? And so those are the questions you should ask yourself. What do I want my friends and family to know now? If I want them to know I love them, you should say I love you right now. If you regret not talking to your mother more on the phone, you should pick up the phone and call her right now. You're not going to be shocked at the end. You know what your regrets are. You know what you want to say if you take the time to really think about it. And you should do that now.
Kerry Egan is a hospice chaplain and the author of the book On Living. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for the interview. I really appreciate it.
Kerry Egan will speak at events for the McShane Preacher Colloquium on Sunday, March 10th and Monday, March 11th at First Presbyterian Church in Kalamazoo. Links with more details can be found at WMUK.org. In the extended version of the interview, Kerry Egan talks about the family secrets shared before people die.
Those family secrets are really tough. And part of the reason people have kept them for so long is they don't know how people are going to respond to them.
You can find the longer version of our interview at our website, the WMUK app, and WMUK's West Southwest podcast from Apple iTunes and by searching podcasts in Google Music. For WMUK, I'm Gordon Evans.